welcome back to another podcast. I am re-interviewing a person I interviewed at first about a year ago. Her name is Maureen Boren, and she is with the Coachella Valley History Museum, a wonderful little gem of a museum we have located just down the street here on Monroe. It's between here and Highway 111. And so, Maureen, welcome back.
Thank you.
We are going to provide links on the site to both our first interview and also the interview that I did in December with Patricia, the new director, managing director there. But today we're going to talk about what's new at the museum. So, Maureen, what's new?
Oh, gosh, Bob. It's hard to keep up with things. We have small things and large things. And one of the ongoing things that we have are art exhibits in our small exhibit area at the museum. And this art exhibit launches this coming weekend, but it will be up for 2 months. And it's by Silvio Silvestri, who is a plein air artist, very popular in the La Quinta Cove. He lives in the La Quinta Cove. He does a lot of local places, landscapes, buildings, historic buildings. And he's going to have about 15 of his paintings in our Pioneer Hall at the museum, which is 82616 Miles Avenue in Old Town Indio. And that will be launched this Sunday, Sunday, March 5th, but it will be open all of March and all of April.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Silvio is new to me, but he's been around the Coachella Valley a long time.
Oh, he has been around, and he's been in all of the major festivals, including the La Quinta Arts, the Southwest. He has shown down in Laguna. He also does paintings in Laguna. He's shown throughout California, and has been schooled in Europe as well as the United States. He's a real crowd pleaser, mm-hmm. and a delightful gentleman.
Okay, well, that's very good to know. And one of your biggest events of the year is coming up, right?
Oh, it is definitely coming up. It's here before we know it. This is our annual, what we call Heritage Festival, and it will be March 18th, that's a Saturday, from 10 to 4. It is free to the community. It is our gift to the community. And what we have going that day, Bob, is a way for people to connect with the different various cultures that really were instrumental and significant in developing this valley, a lot of whom people may not be aware of their influence. And by that, I mean we obviously know of the Anglo pioneers that came west. We know of Mexican-American presence. We may be less knowledgeable about the Japanese culture, especially that settled before World War II, mm-hmm. the Armenian culture that came down from Fresno, and the Black culture. And to that end, we try and show people what it was like for all of these cultures to come here. Why did they come here? What did their grandparents and great-grandparents do? What drew them to this very difficult land? And how did they manage? What did they do once they got here? And so we have contacted many pioneers that represent these different cultures, and their family members have developed what we call family boards or story boards. And they will be on exhibit along with someone from the family. And the idea is that you can come up and chat with them, ask them questions, find out a little bit more about what happened, who they are. It's really a wonderful way to educate people in a very low-key manner. It's not like going to a lecture or anything mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. We also have demonstrators that show all kinds of skills that people would be involved in at the turn of the century and into the 20s. Like we have a blacksmith, we have flint knapping, because we prominently demonstrate the Kaweah culture, which of course was the first culture, the first civilization in the valley. We call them the first people, very, very important to us. We have leather makers, we have people that are going to talk about horsemanship. We have spinners and weavers and sewers. We even have a family that's coming from Joshua Tree with their goats, their kid goats, and they take goat milk and turn it into soap, and they also spin the hair from the goats. And so the wife will be spinning, and the husband will be dealing with the goats. We're going to have the FFA group, Future Farmers of America from Indy, Ohio, are bringing animals and talking about their care of the animals and their program. They're also going to be conducting a farmer's market. And we're trying to really feature the agricultural importance of the valley this year. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have tractors, new tractors, old tractors. How many people? Well, many people have been around a tractor if they came from the Midwest, but a lot of our visitors have not. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have tractors. We're going to have vintage cars, Model Ts and Model As. And, of course, there's entertainment throughout the day. Mm-hmm. Entertainment that's representative of the different cultures. We have Taiko Japanese drummers, which are always exciting. We have folk singers and fiddlers. Barnaby Finch's Jazz Grass, which is a mixture of jazz and bluegrass, is coming up from Idlewild. Barnaby is a very well-known musician, stage musician, and musician in his own right. Plays at the Jazz Festival in Idlewild every August. He's coming down with his six-man group. We have gospel choir, folkloric dancers. And then, if you are unfamiliar with Old Town Indio, we have about 10 wonderful historic murals. And we will have Jeeps available to take you on a tour of the murals.
Wow, that's great. It sounds like this, but just to ask the question, this is for the whole entire family, right?
It is very family-oriented, and what I didn't mention is there's a lot of make-it-and-take-it crafts that the children and parents can be involved in. For example, we're going to have butter-making, apple-peeling, origami-folding, clothespin doll-making, games like a slingshot booth and sack races, hopscotch, jump rope, checkers, a lot of the old-time games mm-hmm. That sometimes kids have gotten away from or really aren't exposed to today.
Yeah, well, I note that this is coming at what is spring break for a lot of schools, and it's likely that there'll be a lot of grandchildren coming down to visit our residence.
It's a wonderful place for the whole family. People might think, oh, well, it sounds great for kids, but when they start to see those demonstrators and they sit down to learn how to do origami, pretty soon we've got the whole family involved, which is really what we want. We want it to be something for everyone on every level. And, of course, we'll have food, barbecue and Mexican food and Japanese donuts and Japanese mochi and Armenian sweets and kettle corn and, oh, date shakes, of course, date shakes, yes. Because we have the only date museum in the United States on campus.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I went to the festival last year as a result of the podcast that we did. And this is the only date museum in the United States. And
that is exactly
we have
right.
Got
and
a
we
very
have developed
close...
a museum around the whole history of the date, which in Saudi Arabia and Syria and the Middle East is called the Blessed Tree. It is so significant in their culture, in their religion, and in their economy. It is given a very special place. And when we actually earned a wonderful award from Dubai about 2 years ago for creating the Date Museum and interpreting the history of the Date Museum to our American visitors.
Mm-hmm.
And we have found, in going back and research, every major religion talks about the date palm, the blessed tree, and it's different parts of it, the blossoms and the branches, all have something to do with different religions. So it is a unifier, and it's kind of an exotic fruit. Did you know that it's not a tree, Bob?
I did not know that. Looks like a tree.
It looks like a tree. It looks like a regular, you know, another palm. Palms, the date palm is a plant, and it grows differently than the stalk or the trunk of a tree. And that's why we refer to a cluster of date palms as a date garden, not a date grove.
Mm.
Because it's one of the most ancient trees on the planet.
Yeah, I think it's really important now because all the recent news about the Middle East is negative. But for thousands of years, it was all positive coming out of there. And in fact, we used to have a very warm relationship with many of those countries in the Middle East.
Right. And if you could see in our display the people that have come from our valley and have gone back and forth to various parts of the Middle East, Egypt and so on, and have shared information farmer to farmer, it's a different playing field. You know, it's non-political. It's like there's a common interest and a common concern from finding disease-free product and how to improve the product and how to market the product and how the various uses that people are making of the palm in different cultures. But it is a totally different level of connection that we have in this particular valley to the Middle East.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell one other story that I learned last year that in case people don't run into this man, but there was I was talking to a Japanese man whose grandfather was an original settler. And in fact, he sold Mr. Shields the acreage along Highway 111 where Shields Gate Date Farm is right now.
Mm-hmm.
But during the World War II, when all the Japanese were sent to internment camps, his neighbors maintained his farm for him and gave it back to him after the war had ended. I think it's a wonderful story and, you know, shows what a great place this is and how cooperative people are.
You're right, Bob. That was Charlie Shibata. And Charlie will be there again this year. He is in his 90s now.
Yeah, that's why I said
I did. A wonderful source of information.
Yeah, that is wonderful.
Not only did that happen with not just his family, but a few other Japanese families, they maintained the property. They protected it as well as they could. It was a time when the harvest was ready to take place, the worst possible time for the families to leave. And so the farmers around, they harvested the crop, put it on the train, sent it to Los Angeles, sold the crop, brought it back, and put it in the little Coachella Valley Land Bank down in Coachella. It's still on the main street, and now it's a Rabobank. But at that time, the Westerfield family owned that bank and managed it. They were quite pioneers. And all the farmers had their money in that bank. And I will say to this day, many of the agribusiness people still keep their money in that little bank. But what Mr. Westerfield did was he protected their assets and would not allow them to be invaded. but he also paid the property tax for the families so that they wouldn't lose their property and they would have something to come back to. And, Bob, that's why we have a commemorative Japanese garden on our site, because the Japanese pioneers were very instrumental in starting our museum.
Okay, well, thank you for relating all of that. I hope we've generated some interest in this. This, again, is going to be March 18th from 10 until 4, correct?
10 to 4, and it's free admission, and hopefully it's going to be a beautiful day, and as we do have beautiful days in this valley, no rain.
That's right. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming back on, and we've enjoyed it. And hope that this is going to generate some interest for your festival.
Thank you, Bob. I really appreciate speaking with your folks.
Okay, well, that's going to wrap up another podcast. Thank you for your attention. And until next time, bye-bye.